Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and my poorly little boy, is Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
No, it's fine. It's all right. I'm better now. So
good. Glad to hear it. We are very proud to be partnered with Pleaties throughout March. You've probably heard us speak about Pleaties before. They are a clothing brand. Casual wear exclusively for us long-suffering Spurs fans. Their designs are inspired by the highs and lows of being proper coys. They include a celebration of that night in Amsterdam and an homage to the Tottenham High Road. It's glorious stuff. I will also say that they are good people, and I'm very, very happy that we're working with them. We all have Pleaties Clobber. We like it very much. The quality is excellent. Do go check them out at pleaties.com. The name is a David Pleat reference. In fact, he was on the Spurs show recently, David Pleat. So if you're not familiar with David Pleat, go listen to that. He is an incredibly knowledgeable man when it comes to football, and it's a good listen. So it is spelled Pleaties, P-L-E-A-T-E-E-S, and the web address is pleaties.com. Bardi, you're never out of your Pleaties Clobber.
It is true, Chris. You may introduce yourself as my best friend, but those who really know the two of us will know you can be quite controlling and demanding of me. This includes my podcasting get-up. I need to appear on brand, not just for our listeners, but for you, Windy. You may opt for the more formal attire, but I'm a man who likes to be able to move and get around, especially when dodging strays on Twitter. But I still like to be able to rep Spurs without going all club shop Arsenal. That's why I do like Pleaties. It's different. It's subtle, yet not very subtle. And it's pretty cool. Plus, they follow me on Twitter and like all my tweets, which is extra kudos for them.
You should definitely give them a follow on Twitter as well, at Pleaties. Again, it's P-L-E-A-T-E-E-S. Drop them a tweet. Say that you're an ex-sub. Say hi. They've created a discount code for their shop. It's especially for the Extra Inch listeners. It is extra 20, and that will get you 20% off. I've actually got my eye on the Amsterdam t-shirt at the moment. I think I'm going to get that. Yeah, check them out, pleaties.com.
Sometimes Nathan, I wear clothes while we're recording too.
Harking back to the infamous episode where we recorded with the Weird Dealer Radio guys, and Nathan was half-dressed.
Well, as far as you could tell, I have AC now, so it's not going to happen again. It's just a nice little treat for them.
Nathan, you've been a poorly boy.
Yeah, there's not been much in the way of Patriots. So, like, yeah, my parents had the virus a couple of weeks ago, and then I got the deadly video done. And then I thought I had the virus, but I tested negative. I had a cold, basically, I think. It felt like a cold. I've been doing some data stuff, but I've been coughing a lot. I might have to remove a few coughs from this episode because I've still got a bit of a cough going on. But yeah, there was a point where it's like, I've tested negative, but it's like, I don't want to be getting on the train and stuff and like coughing and sneezing all over the place and getting funny looks. And my girlfriend who has to go to matches to report on them, she doesn't want that either. So I've been isolating on my own with the cold. But it's, I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm not passing on the cold to members of my family. And I feel like that is actually, it's weird, but it's maybe not, maybe it shouldn't be weird. Maybe this should be just be like a fine, normal thing to do. To not just be like, oh, someone I live with has the cold and now so does everyone else, you know?
Yes, normalize not spreading disease. Absolutely. I think that's a wise way to go. I mean, I actually, I've always thought that going into work with a cold is quite antisocial, although I have done it. I'm lucky enough to have my own office at work, and every time I've been in with a cold, I've always like shut my office door, and I've even at times put a sign on my office door pre-pandemic days saying I'm ill, I wouldn't recommend coming in, kind of thing. But yeah, it's a real problem in open plan offices.
Well, I mean, the number of like service jobs I worked through my teenage years and my early 20s where like I couldn't call in, and like food service jobs as well. It's fucking disgusting, to be honest. But like I couldn't call in, but oh, I can't come in, I've got a cold. That wouldn't be acceptable. But the opposite shouldn't be acceptable. You know, it's grim. It's really grim.
It's really grim. And the thing is, you don't know like. Some people are fine with having a cold, right? They're like, oh, it's just a cold. I just got a cold. So my partner and her mother are both extremely clinically vulnerable. Hence, I'm essentially still in my COVID lockdown. I've not done basically anything for the last 2 and a bit years, right? Having a cold for my girlfriend's mother could potentially be very serious. She could die from having a cold. And you don't know from sort of day-to-day interactions with people what their vulnerability is. So I think wearing a mask when you've got a cold and sort of isolating, it seems very sensible to me from a sort of public health perspective. Are we on our high horse again, Nathan?
Buddy wants to talk about football now.
Yeah, he's given the look, isn't he? I mean, in fact, what he's doing is what he does when this happens is he's kind of gazing off into the distance. He's disengaged from the conversation. And he's just thinking, I want to talk about Matt Doherty.
Frothing
I'm
at the
actually,
bits.
I'm actually looking at my soundbars really nervous that I've got interference. So that's actually what I'm doing.
Oh, bless. It all sounds fine from my perspective.
Great. Then we shall continue and talk about proper football.
What we do on this podcast when there are two matches in a week is we focus on the most recent one, and the reason that is very helpful at the moment is because the most recent one is nearly always when Spurs have won, and so we start off with the positive stuff and then we can leave the negative bits till midway through the pod. So we'll kick off with Everton, a match in which we scored so many goals I had to re-watch them just now to remind myself of the goals. Where we always start is the lineups, and I mean, I guess there were no surprises. We were lucky enough to have Lolo Bentancur back in the team, which is obviously great news. Bardi, no surprises really from Antonio Conte's team selection.
No, not at all. It was great to see Bentancur back. He just filled me with a little bit more confidence. This was a weird game. I think it's our first one on a Monday for quite some time. Definitely this season. I can't remember the last one. And I was kind of 50-50. I had a busy day today, whether or not to make the journey down to White Hart Lane. And I left it late. It was maybe 4:15 Monday evening. I decided to go, and I'm very glad I did. I kind of was hoping that we'd get a team that would just turn up, roll over and let us tickle their belly. And my God, we got a team that did that. I haven't seen a team so willing, well, Leeds maybe, so willing just to allow us to play to our strengths. It was great to see.
Do you know what? So the first couple of goals that we scored, that Everton conceded, it was really reminiscent to me of our goals conceded against Wolves. Like, you know, they started... sort of all right, Everton. They were sort of pressing quite high and looking quite aggressive, and then they just shot themselves in the foot twice, which is exactly how I felt about our performance against Wolves. The difference then was that they absolutely collapsed, and we were ruthless. We were really sort of vigorously attacking them for the next 50 minutes, whereas in the Wolves game, I actually felt like we put up a pretty good fight thereafter, you know, having conceded the two ridiculous goals. But Everton just broke mentally. It was almost possible to see the moment where their the fight left them.
There's quite some almost kinship between us and them in terms of, you know, two historic teams, two big teams with a lot of history, kind of dominated in their city by a rival that wears red. You know, the kind of down in their luck charm that they have. But how they played was very reminiscent of I don't know, like early 2000s Spurs, and even moments under AVB where they just, things went against them and they just collapsed and had no way to fight back. And it's very strange that if you look at their players as individuals, they're pretty good, man. They got some decent names on that pitch, but they're just a mess of individuals just who just kind of moving around, not doing anything, not playing any type of style. And you could see that they didn't know what they were doing that entire game.
One thing I would say is their defence is really horrendous. I mean, obviously they've got serious injuries. Yerry Mina is a loss for sure. So yeah, I mean, I think they are hampered with injury, but their defence is a real mess. And I felt confident when I saw Jonjo Kenny playing left back. I felt very confident.
He got dribbled in his box by Matt Doherty.
Yeah, that's not a good sign, is it? Yeah, I mean, Kulusevski gave him an absolutely torrid time, to be honest. He really did. Just toyed with him for pretty much the whole game. Nathan, interesting tactical match. I thought Everton going aggressive, pressing us high, defending with a relatively high line, which is incredibly risky against Kane and Son, and Spurs just happy to be really quite press resistant and calm in the back at the back and just sort of pass the ball around and wait for the gaps to appear.
It's kind of the dream opposition for Conte's tactical style. A team who are willing to press high but not very good at it.
Yeah, that's nicely put. Did you pick up much else from our performance in terms of our tactics? Or yeah, I mean, I agree, it was just Conte doing Conte things. There was very few hurdles to overcome,
yeah.
Shall I say.
Yeah.
It just sort of felt like we could pick them off.
There was a real determination to play out from the back, which did cause some grumbles amongst the crowd.
I'm sure. Yeah, the crowd hates it.
They didn't like it at all. And yeah, I don't think it helps when, like, you're dropping the ball into Schoenberg, and sometimes he just seems unwilling to Zoolander to turn right and get the ball out of him. So
he was brilliant. I thought he had a great game.
He had a good game, but there's still real big flaws to his game. And I think a few times he got caught. But then he had moments where he looked good, but I do think he needs upgrading. A better midfielder there makes us sing a lot better than he does.
So there's quite a few really impressive performances to talk through. I think, once again, we should start with Harry Kane, who just continues his incredible run of form. The goals are starting to come now, and this is the thing. We saw the upturn in the shot numbers. We've known that he's been underperforming his expected goals significantly. Normally, he overperforms.
First time in his life, yeah.
Yeah, for the first time in his entire Spurs career, he was underperforming his expected goals. He's been a massive overperformer previously. So, you know, underperforming isn't just a sort of drop off from, you know, your level with your expected goals. It's a drop off from massively overperforming. So it's really significant. And the goals are coming now. He's finishing things. He looks really confident again in front of goal. He's not kind of second guessing himself. He's not in his own head. Everything feels very natural. The sort of the intelligent volleyed finish at the back post for the second week running is a joy to see. This one different, of course, because he had time to watch the ball from Doherty sort of land on his foot. The first goal, really nice, kind of, I guess, probably gave Pickford the eyes, made him think he was going to go across him and then put it in the near post. He was just brilliant, Vardy, again.
He was. There was a moment in the first half where Everton chipped the ball into Richarlison and he tried to do the same and he just swung and missed. And then he actually, 2 seconds later, the same thing happened again and he swung and missed again, which was very funny. But the Kane one, so I was in line with the ball when it left Doherty's foot, and it just dropped so nicely. And you're right, Kane had so much time to watch it, which almost makes it more difficult because you've got to pay attention to it. And it reminded me of my pool table at sixth form, where you would just get your cue ball and, you know, you'd bounce it off the top cushion. Then as it falls down with your cue, you would just smack it into the pocket, and it was all about timing, and you'd always fuck up the timing. But that's where Harry Kane's different. It just dropped and he popped. just tucked it away beautifully.
So Harry Kane has now overtaken Thierry Henry in the all-time Premier League goal scorers list. He's at number 6. He is one goal behind 5th, Frank Lampard, with 177. He is 8 goals behind Sergio Aguero in 4th place with 184. And he is 11 goals behind Andy Cole in 3rd place with 187 goals. Does he get 11 goals between now and the end of the season?
Yeah. I was about to say, I think he'll overtake Cole.
So
between
you think third place by the end of the league?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe even with a couple of games to go. I mean, I think he's in that kind of level of form now.
Do you remember when the Golden Boot was close and then we went to Leicester and he scored, was it 4?
Yeah.
And then against Hull in the next game, he got another hat trick. That's what he got, like 7 in the last 2 games.
Two completely dead rubber, nothing games.
How far behind the top goal scorer is he?
He's quite far. He's, I think Salah's on 16, 17,
Salah's
18.
Away already this season. Yeah.
Let's have a quick look. Premier League top scorers. So Mohamed Salah, 19.
Yeah.
Harry Kane, 10.
Yeah.
Is it uncatchable?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you think he's going to get 11 or more league goals between now and the end of the season?
I guess the thing is, how many is Salah going to score?
He's going to continue to put them away, I reckon.
So would you expect at least another 5 or 6 from him,
he's
right?
He's got to get to 25 to be within the shout, I think.
So Kane needs 15 goals.
I mean, it could happen.
I don't think so.
But, yeah. It depends who we still have to play. We still have to play Norwich. Who have we got in the other...
We've got Brighton and Brentford and Leicester.
Maybe. He does... Yeah, I don't think... I think if he can get into second or third place, it would have been a good end of the season.
I mean, the fact that we're even speculating and having this conversation is a sign of the ridiculous level of form that Harry Kane is in, and it is a wonderful thing. Long may it continue. Massive shout out to Matthew Doherty. Just a really solid right wing back performance.
I sort of don't know what to say, to be honest.
Totally the same. I have no idea how to explain it or how to talk about it. I still think he's not a proper right wing back. He's just because he doesn't seem to move, but he's really good. He's pretty decent on the ball and his positioning is solid.
He's still going to have defensive shortcomings, although I think he's improved in the area. He's still going to probably not look great under strong pressure and sort of more generally in tight spaces, I guess. But his attacking output in a small sample has been outstanding. You know, when we looked at his crossing, Windy, before we signed him, or just as we signed him, and he kept going for this chip shot, this wedge across, this diagonal cross. And we were like, we don't like that.
Oh, you mean the one that he assisted Kane with?
Yeah, that one. For the second time.
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say the exact same thing to you. It was really amusing. But I mean, the thing is, from that angle, it's great.
Yeah.
That's his crossing style. That's his technique. It won't work from around the corner, but you know, just outside the box, absolutely it can
work. Underlapping Kulusevski to get into that position, it's gonna happen a couple more times.
I'm not gonna lie, I didn't know he had that in him. I knew he had that style of pass in him because we watched it in that video and bemoaned it. But I didn't know he had that sort of vision and creativity from that area in him. I've always seen Doherty as a sort of quite a functional player, someone who is not a good ball progressor, not an especially strong defender, but someone who does make consistently really brilliant back post runs, times those runs to perfection. It's called almost mechanical. It's like he's not the most flamboyant player. He's not the most technically able player, but he knows what he has to do and he does it and he repeats it. And this is the thing. But actually, he showed some really good creative passing in that game yesterday. 2 through balls, which were... you know, not immaculate, but they were well seen and well played. And then that ridiculous ball to Kane.
I wrote him off as a Premier League footballer. I was wrong and I apologise. Someone pointed out, I can't remember who, but it's something that's been on my mind recently. Remember that he had the virus shortly after he signed.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying at the time, you know, give him a little while, you know, don't read him on his next few performances. It might take him a while. get back to fitness. But there has been a number of athletes who've taken months and over a year even. And I do wonder if that may be the case, because I think he looks sharper. I think he looks fitter. Maybe that's just Conte's training, you know?
But I also think it's confidence, it's self-belief, because I've seen the exact same growth in Sessegnon. I would say he didn't have the perfect first half yesterday, Sessegnon. Not by any stretch. He was erratic in that match. But generally, I think his performances are really improving. He's showing a lot more confidence in the final third, the willingness to attempt shots. And the cross, obviously, for the Michael Keane own goal was a really impressive bit of work from Sessegnon. So the fact that sort of two players have gone from looking scared of their own shadow to actually, you know, proper, decent options for us, I think speaks to the self-belief they've got, which stems from the belief that the manager has in them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, absolutely. COVID, of course, is going to have an impact on a player and will certainly knock a player's rhythm for sure. While we're talking about Doty, there's reporting today that Spurs are ready to listen to offers for Emerson Royale. I absolutely do not want to shit on Emerson Royale at this point. I think it's not fair or right. But, you know, I think it's important to remember that Emerson Royale was signed for Nuno when we were playing a very different system, you know, a different formation, and the role that he was going to be asked to play would have been significantly different. I don't think for one second that we would have targeted Emerson Royale if Conte was in charge.
Yeah, I agree.
So the idea of being willing to listen to offers for him makes total sense to me.
Yeah. I feel kind of bad for him, to be honest. I think it's been a really unfortunate sort of series of events. Mm. I tweeted out earlier his polar from this season and last season. So his season at Betis, where he got into the Brazilian national team and we signed him for 25 million, and this season where he is, you know, written off and despised. And they're pretty similar statistical outputs. He's been sort of fairly consistent. It's just, I think, a change of circumstances and the change of what's been asked of him. I think he's looked more sort of shaky under pressure than I was expecting him to be. And I did point out that his 1v1 defending against a really fast, tricky winger can be an issue, but I didn't think it'd be as bad as it has been. But basically, we're asking a sort of steady defensive fullback to be a difference making, wonderful, creative wing back. And I think that if we were asking Ben Davies to play week in, week out at wing back, maybe we'd be having similarly negative opinions of him, you know. So I just think it's a bit of a shame for him, basically.
Well, we have been, like, for 4 or 5 years we've been talking negatively about Ben Davies as a fullback and as a wing back, but not anymore, because now he's the greatest left-sided centre-back in world football.
I think Emerson Royale is a perfectly good fullback.
Same.
Just not for us, basically.
Mm.
Yeah. I think you could sort of put him into a number of teams as a fullback and he would do a very, very good job. I mean, in the same way that I think Aaron Wan-Bissaka looked really good for Crystal Palace and doesn't look good in the role that he's expected to play for Man U. I think there's a lot of similarity there, personally. Exceptional performance from Dejan Kulusevski. I thought he was magnificent this game. I've been really impressed with his form generally. Less so against Borough, where he just looked a bit knackered, to be honest. But, you know, properly back to his best again. The output, the sort of comparative output with Lucas is ridiculous.
I mean, in terms of like ball progression and like the dribbles he gets going, and even like it's not too far apart in like the number of key passes that Lucas was racking up, but it's just the difference making around it is so significant. I guess it's more efficient, you know. It's maybe less voluminous but more efficient, I think. I still think, like, don't assume that he's just going to keep popping away goals and assists every game forever and all that, but it's like, I don't know, when you have the profile of Kane and the profile of Son, like the most rounded forward in world football and one of the best forwards the game has ever seen, and Son, who's this like all-time finisher from wide angles and an incredible runner in behind, the player you want to accompany them is someone who's a bit creative, someone who's going to link it up, keep it simple, play it smart, You don't want a player who just wants to come deep for the ball and turn and do it all himself, you know? So again, as much as it's like, it's kind of like the opposite of what we're saying with Royale and what we're saying with Doherty, it's just suitability to a player that suits getting the best out of that, you know, being third mic to Kane and Son, you know, rather than trying to be the star next to them. I think just someone who brings those two into play and helps them out is perfect.
I saw on Serie A Twitter people talking about Kulusevski's already matched his goals and assist output this season at Tottenham, that he took him 24 games or something in Serie A to do. And one of the comments was, maybe the Premier League is the Farmers League, which did make me lol. Because they really thought they were getting rid of a dud, and he's been magnificent.
I do think, Nathan, he has got some star quality of his own, though. I mean, I know what you're saying. I know you're sort of saying that, you know, we've got these two unbelievably world-class players, and yeah, he has to sort of just play second fiddle to some degree. But I think he's bringing a sort of level of star quality at the moment. And of course, it could revert to something less than that, and hopefully it won't, but it's likely it will. But at the moment, I mean, what I'm thinking is having Kane and Son means that the opposition must just be constantly obsessed by Kane and Son, right? Sure, and that naturally will create space for the other player in the sort of forward trio. And we've never really benefited from that. We've never found someone who helped us to benefit from the supposed extra space. And now we're finding someone that has benefited to such a degree that the opposition is now going to be wanting to double up on him too. So it's like, oh my goodness, we are a nightmare to play against to some degree now, because not only have you got Kane and Son who could deliver goals and assists, you've got this fantastic, creative, very strong, good finishing player on the opposite side of the pitch. I mean, it's wonderful.
I mean, we talk a lot about Lucas's defensive qualities and the fact that he can press and everything else. Kulusevski does that. He does it even smarter.
Really, really good defensive play from him consistently. And what I like about him, so he doesn't always like, he's not someone who'll hair around and sort of chase down the ball, but he'll make himself an extra body, someone else to for opposition players to have to get around, and then make himself an option when we win the ball back. So as soon as we win, he's looking for space, he's making himself available, and then he's really good at holding the ball up in tight areas, giving his teammates a chance to sort of get close to him, make runs off him. And he's very reliable. He's not someone who kind of gives the ball away in dangerous positions too often.
I mean,
I love him.
If he had a touch more pace, I think he'd be genuine world-class level footballer, genuine elite level. He just lacks a little bit of pace. Sometimes on the counter-attack, he just can't get going. But I can't complain about him. That's just me being picky and asking for everything.
I think he can get faster. I think it would be possible. Like, Harry Kane slightly changed his body shape and his running gait and was able to get a little bit faster. And I think it's possible that Kulusevski could do the same. I'd say him and Kane are probably of a similar speed. I've not been able to check any sort of speed data, but I would, just from the eye test, they looked like they move at a similar speed, and that's not held Kane back. So I'm not worried about him. I just think he's wonderful, and I think he's got potential to get even better. I'm very excited about that signing. I really am. Interesting substitutions in this match, I thought. So obviously Sessegnon came off at half-time injured. He's hurt his hamstring. He was having a scan today. Let's hope that it's nothing too serious, because he's certainly hitting some form. It seemed right to take him off as soon as we were concerned.
I didn't realize he was injured. I thought I just thought it was like bringing Reguilon back in from COVID type sub. I didn't clock it at the time. Who do you think, if they're both fit and ready and fresh, who do you think is starting at the moment between those two?
Sessegnon.
No.
I still think it's Reguilon, but I do think at least it's in contention now, and that means we have two good options for left wing back, and that's really good.
I do think Reguilon can be a bit more hasty almost with the ball going forward, but that's just because he's a bit more, he's a little bit more dangerous and willing to take a chance. And I just think he's still the better player. Sessegnon has had a good little period and got some nice assists and stuff. But it needs to be Reguilon for the time being.
think Sessegnon better suits the running ahead of the play.
Yes.
Which is what how we're maximising our wing-backs at the moment. But I still think the overall better play is Reguilon. And I'd rather ask Reguilon to do his impression of Sessegnon running ahead of the ball than try to get Reguilon to round out. I mean, obviously, I still want Sessegnon to do that, to round its game, to master the defensive side, to gather a sort of a more physical presence and to be able to carry the ball better and those kinds of things. And I back him to improve that side of his game. But I'm saying is, going into the next match or whatever, I would play Reguilon.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I would go Cess. I think Reguilon's been quite poor defensively recently and quite wasteful at the other end. Obviously, took his chance fantastically well, having been on the pitch for like 40 seconds or something against Everton. Decent finish. I thought he looked really good. I thought he had a strong second half performance, to be honest, whereas Sessegnon was a little bit more erratic in the first. But I kind of agree with what you said initially there, Nathan. I really like the way Sessegnon attacks space, interprets space. I like his tactical understanding in this system a bit more than Reguilon. But sure. I concede that Reguilon is a sort of more, you know, clearly a more confident all-round footballer. I think once Sessegnon has a few more games and believes in himself even more, then we've got something really exciting to work with. I just hope that this injury isn't too serious, because it's so typical of his Spurs career so far. Yeah. That, you know, he gets a bit of a start and then he gets injured and then he comes back and works himself back into the team and gets another appearance and then he gets injured again. And it must be so demoralizing for him.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
I want to comment on Romero. I started off talking about the substitutions. Then I think the move to take off Romero was a really sensible one. He was on a yellow card for a quite ridiculous challenge against Richarlison. Obviously, they've got some ongoing beef, which has been on and off the pitch, judging by Romero's Instagram. Did you know about this?
I didn't know about it, but it was right under me, and the reaction of that stand was a collective gasp, then laugh, then applause, because it was really agricultural, man. He just wiped him out, and you don't really see those tackles anymore. And it was an amazing thing to see. It's one of the most impressive things I've seen at that new stadium. Just it was ferocious, but it wasn't over the top, but it was reckless, but it was within the brackets of a yellow card tackle. It was very smart and very cunning from him. It was very Latin and very Argentinian.
This is a thing. This goes back. This will happen basically every time we play Richarlison. It happens with international games. I'm not sure where the starting point is, and I'd like to know what the history is, but they fucking hate each other. Yeah.
There was beef at Goodison Park, wasn't there? They squared up and had a go at each other when it was the VAR decision for the penalty that wasn't given. They were really going at it then.
they are definitely not friends.
Yeah, but they're also like, sure, I understand that there's genuine anger and hatred there, but there's also like a sort of a, like it's so obscene, it's so dramatic, it's like a cartoon, it's like an anime rivalry. It's like a, they're not just, oh, this guy's a prick. It's like, no, this guy's my nemesis. I am sworn to defeat him and all that kind of stuff, you know? That's the vibe I get.
I'm here for it. I'm looking forward to the Everton game in 2 years' time once they got promoted again.
Yeah. I mean, there was a little bit of it's more sportsman beef rather than real hatred, but Dele went in on Kane like over the top and not the kind of tackle that you would expect of friends and former colleagues. And Kane, as he stood up, he turned his back and didn't even acknowledge, and Dele didn't say sorry or anything. And you could see, but just by Kane's body language, that was coming back, and he was going to get his own back. And it was God's work when he took out Dele. It just, that's Harry Kane. I love that moment.
I don't remember this. I know I definitely like checked out a little bit for the last 15 minutes of the match, but I just don't remember that at all. I might go back and watch it.
There's a tackle from Dele which is a bit strong. It's fair but hard, as like Alex from Bristol would like to say. And Kane waited and bided his time, and he got his own back. It was beautiful.
On Romero, I just think he's wonderful. I think he's, you know, aside from that crazy tackle and wanting to hurt Charleston, he's such a good footballer. He's so calm, and it was really interesting to sort of get the direct comparison with Sanchez yesterday coming on. And look, I'm not going to shit on Sanchez. He is what he is. He's not suited to the system, but he's not a bad player. But when you see the two of them and when they receive the ball, it really shows you what a fabulous footballer Romero is. There was a moment on 70 minutes when Sanchez picks up the ball in a position that Romero's picked it up so many times in that match and in previous matches. And he kind of, his body position just, it means that he's only ever going to be able to do one thing, which is just pass it straight out to Doherty. And then he takes this kind of awkward little touch to, I think it's Dele actually, he's closing him down. He takes this awkward little touch, which telegraphs it even more. So Doherty then, I think he kind of plays it off the opposition player, wins a throw. If that comes to Romero in the same position, he's got an open body position. He can go forward, he can go back, he can take the player on. He's just so confident in possession. He's so, I don't know what the word is. He's
very fluid. He's a very fluid
defender. He's fluid. He's natural. He looks like he played in midfield. He doesn't look like a centre back when he receives the ball. And that leaves him with options. Mm. And it's wonderful. It means that we can properly play out from the back, which I thought, again, we did a really good job with yesterday. So I just love Romero so much, and I think he adds so much to our game. And if we can sign another ball playing centre back, either, you know, left sided, central, or even as a backup, just someone who can play, I'll feel really, really good going into next season.
Yeah, you know, I do feel like you were shitting on Sanchez a little bit. You are asking him to be a player that he's never been, never will be.
That's true.
So there is a fault there with trying to play this system with him, like the same kind of thing we've seen with Royale.
It's
not that individual's fault. He's not a Conte defender, and he will be sold this summer. He's done okay in the times he's played, but definitely if Conte stays and we're going to stick with this, then Sanchez needs to be moved on.
100%, and he'll go and be really good at a team that doesn't need him to play out from the back. He'll be really, really good, and I wish him all the best because I like Sanchez. I think he seems like a really, really decent guy, and he's, you know, over the years he's put in some good performances for us as well. He's by no means a bad player. He's just unsuited. Mm-hmm. But thinking about it, if we sell Sanchez and Emerson Royale and maybe even Lucas, that's quite a lot of money we can potentially bring in the summer for three players who don't really fit that well. That's quite exciting. That's
plus
100 million there.
Lo Celso, Ndombele money as well.
Mm. Mm. Absolutely. So the other substitution, of course, was Son coming off for Bergwijn getting a rest. I really liked resting Son. Obviously, it would be nice to rest Kane as well, but at least one of them got a rest, which is good.
I'd really like to have seen Harvey White, but I was also quite happy to see Bergwijn. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Likewise. Yeah. I think that would have been a good game to blood White give him a chance. But it's fine. He'll probably get some minutes. At the moment, I'm kind of disappointed that he's not out on loan, because I feel like we've wasted his season, to be honest. But whatever.
I don't think so. I think if we've got a young player there playing with Conte, training with Conte every week, we know the effect Conte has on individuals over the course of a 7-day period. I think it's fine for him to be there learning and having a bit of experience of working with our manager.
Fair enough. So let's do Borough. A struggle of a match. I mean, it was massively boring. We were clearly just knackered. He didn't rotate, which was a surprise to me. The players just looked heavy-legged and not very motivated. Mm-hmm. And I thought we started okay, and then we didn't score. So they were just like, oh, it's one of those games. And it's almost felt like they stopped trying to score. A crushing disappointment to lose to a Championship team, obviously. And I did just want that match to fuck off. I really hated every moment of it. But not that surprising, given what we've heard about Conte and sort of two matches a week and cups, would you say?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you sort of mentioned this earlier, that we're doing this thing at the moment where it's like we're hiding on this podcast our losses behind our win. But I really fucking hated this match. No,
it was awful.
Really fucking awful match, because, like, I remember when Conte first came in and we talked about our share of possession, and I said, look, I thought I would mind, but I don't mind Spurs not having a dominant share of possession, because when we do have the ball, we're so creative and efficient with it. We're so good at getting back out of a half that it's not like it was under Mourinho before, and I really like it. But I really, really hated just surrendering the game to a Championship side so much. I hated it. I hated that we didn't rotate, that the players looked disinterested, that we would look tired, that our game plan was to just try to catch them on the break. And I hated that fair play to Wilder and Middlesbrough, that they came really well prepared for our counterattacks and turned us over in midfield again and again. Quite honestly, quite a shameful performance for players and coaching staff alike. I really hated this match so much.
Yeah, I mean, even Conte looked disinterested, didn't he? He you know, you look at how he kind of patrols the touchline in games that he's really up for, and then against Middlesbrough, he just sort of seemed within himself and not that fast.
So if we're going to just surrender the competition, we might as well rotate through 11 right. players and give everyone a rest, and, you know, send the assistant manager or whatever. I just... What I don't know what we're expecting from, like, playing our first 11 in a very casual manner.
Bardi, any thoughts on the Borough match?
It was an absolute misery, and to do it on fucking primetime TV was even worse, man. You've got everybody and their fucking dog sat down to watch this shit, and it's just Spurs doing that. It was awful.
I was getting WhatsApp message from casual football fans.
Yeah.
Really annoying. It's really annoying, Tottenham.
And you know what? It was so poxy that BBC couldn't even get their score thing working.
Oh, yeah.
The game was cut. It was like we were playing Plovdiv or something. It was just amateur right across the thing. And yeah, it was horrible. Horrible game. And it's not what I want to think of ever again.
Yeah, really, really, really not good.
No.
Very bad vibes from that game. But here's what I would say. Here's what I would say. Straight after that game, I was pissed off. And I woke up the next day and I was still pissed off. And the day after that, I thought, it's fine. It's only as long as we beat Everton, I'm fine. We're just going to move on and we're going to keep going and we'll be right as rain again. Because some people were spiralling. Some of the messages, some of the emails we got post-Borough were angry. And how is this being allowed to happen to our football club? And Antonio Conte is going to leave. he's not going to be backed. Harry Kane's going to leave. Someone was emailing us saying, you need to get someone more realistic on the podcast who actually, you know, reflects the views of the majority of the Spurs fandom.
I mean, hello, you already have one. I am the voice of
the fans. Yeah, but Bardi, apparently you are dismissed by Nathan and I. That's the...
that's true as well. I am often dismissed and my best bits are ended up on the cutting room floor. That is the truth.
Don't tell them our secrets.
But you got so upset, Chris, I had to take over Extra Inch Twitter. And I honestly hadn't had that much fun on Twitter in a long time. It was a good afternoon of nice questions and nice conversations.
The reason I was upset was because I felt like everyone else was disproportionately miserable. And that was as a result of Twitter, but as a result of our mailbox as well. And the Discord, actually, to be honest, there's a lot of misery on the Discord, which is normally a happy place. I think the sort of the low lows and the high highs of the last few weeks have been really challenging. But I think if you put it all into perspective and look at the levels of performance when we're at our best now compared to the levels of performance when we were at our best last season, for example, I really do feel good about the way things are going. And look, I know Everton are shit. I know Everton are proper shit. And we played them at a good time, whatever. But I still feel pretty confident about top four. I know people are going to, you know, the second that's off the table, people are going to be coming for me. But I feel good about it. I really do. I think, you know, Arsenal play three tough matches now. We've brought the goal difference back to a sort of closer match with them. It's no longer necessarily a point. You know, essentially the goal difference, when it gets to a certain level, is a point. Not necessarily now. We can catch up with Arsenal in terms of goal difference.
I think United at the weekend is going to be a huge.
Yes, it is.
It's a key game because it's one. First of all, it's against a direct rival. And just everything else that comes along with it, the momentum and all the narrative. But then we do have a problem, and that's that we have a game midweek after United. So if we beat United, we've got Brighton on my birthday, actually.
A midweek game as an occasional thing is not so much of a problem. It's when it's every week, right? That's when it becomes a real burden.
Three games every 2 weeks. That is what the norm should be for an elite professional football club, in my opinion.
And that's fine.
Any more than that is you're doing damage to the product as an entertainment value, to the players on a physical level, to the tactical plan, to the manager and the scheduling and everything else. Any more than three games every 2 weeks is too much, and it's definitely too much for us right now.
For sure. So Whistleblows81 says, is there another team across all four divisions who has a bigger discrepancy between what the fans expect and what the club delivers? Or are all fan bases the same? I lived in Cornwall back in the 80s and watched Plymouth Argyle for a couple of years. It was great fun, albeit shit football, as there were no expectations above where they could get to, which inevitably was nowhere. Has Poch's great team just ruined it for us going forwards now that we've tasted the good times, but realistically can't compete with the big boys?
So to give a sort of a simple and direct answer to the question, no, because Man United and Barcelona and even Arsenal fans all think that they should be winning the league every year, right? And every time that they don't, they're immensely disappointed. Chelsea, I guess, currently in a similar situation, but they've tasted glory recently. So there are, and there's also like club, you know, historical Premier League contenders who are like in Champions League and League One, right? They're having a rough time, you know. So we definitely haven't got it worse in that regard, but we are just sort of in a bit of a rough time now. But I don't know. I see this sentiment, especially online, around this idea that we should be like Champions League contenders every year and everything else, but I'm not sure that that is the dominant mentality in the fan base. I don't know if that reflects that much fans in the stadium. Fans have been following Tottenham, you know, through the 90s and everything else. So I don't think it's that strong, but I take exactly what you're saying about like going to watch your shit local team with no expectations and the joy of that.
I mean, if you look at Man United, for example, there's a sentence in football punditry called "It's Man United."
Yeah.
And that pretty much sums up the discrepancy between what the fans expect. And I think where they are right now, it's a huge gap between what they do. So I think there are fan bases that are worse than ours, but pretty much they're all the same. Every fan goes into a season expecting something good to happen because, you know, that's what we all want to do. So I don't think Poch ruined anything after, you know, when we moved from Redknapp into AVB, there was an expectation for the team to play like how Redknapp had set it up, the fantastical swashbuckling football, which I don't think ever really existed apart from one or two games. But there was, you know, that expectation of it. Now, I don't think Poch has ruined it, and I don't think we have it quite as bad. Like Nathan said, Barcelona expect to be winning the league. Real Madrid demand to win the Champions League every season. I think there's a far bigger discrepancy there.
I mean, I just... Basically, the rich teams do well, right? That's how football works.
Yes.
And we're something like sixth, I think, in terms of our wage spending. But it's not like we're close behind the others. There's the top four or five who pay massive, massive, massive wages. And then there's a massive gap and then there's us. But the thing that elevates us and has elevated us for a number of years is Harry Kane. And previously it was having a good manager, Mauricio Pochettino, one of the best managers in the world. And now we've got Antonio Conte, one of the best managers in the world, and that elevates us. So having Kane and Son and Conte, I think, does give you a sort of expectation around Champions League. And I think that's right. I think it's, you know, to have that expectation is fine. We've got a brilliant manager and two unbelievable players at the same time. If Kane goes in the summer, then that expectation suddenly drops significantly. But while we've got Kane, I'm gonna cling on to that sort of that expectation, that hope. I think there's still a massive amount of potential at Spurs. But the difference is, I'm not gonna kick off if it doesn't happen. I'm not gonna throw my toys out of the pram, because I realise that we still need the stars to align a little bit. We need one of the, you know, if everyone punches their weight, we're fifth or sixth. The idea around me being hopeful and expectant is that someone, I mean, it's Man U this year, someone will drop off, someone will not punch their weight. But that's football, that happens nearly every year if a team doesn't punch their weight. We didn't punch our weight last year. I'm sure there'll be times in the future where we won't punch our weight. And, you know, Arsenal didn't punch their weight for a number of years. It looks like they might be a bit better this year. But, I mean, I like having hope. I like having expectation. I think if you sort of look on the positive side, it's a more enjoyable experience. And that's why Mourinho crippled me as a fan, because I couldn't find any positives to cling to. I really struggled. And my fandom really suffered for it. So sort of having this level of hope is a fun thing for me. And I'm enjoying it. But I'm not going to sort of allow myself to become too disillusioned if, let's say, we come fifth or sixth this season. It's not the end of the world. We'll regroup and hopefully Kane will stay and we go again next year.
Because, you know, we're winning the league in 2024 when Klopp and Guardiola go, and we're season three into Conte. That's when things are really going to kick in. We will win the league in 2024.
With Dane Scarlett scoring 45 goals.
Yeah, now why do you have to ruin it by getting two over the top? I mean, it was already enough I said we'd win the league.
Alex Nathan says, questioning Conte feels mad, but this is bugging me. In the three at the back system that he's wedded to, the wing backs are incredibly important attacking and creative outlets. With the current selection of central midfielders, this is even more the case, as I don't think anyone expects more than a few goal involvements per season from Skip, Hulibier, Winks and Bentancur combined. I like Reguilon and Sessegnon a lot, but I knew Reguilon would miss the sitter against Southampton, and I suspect he ordered two. He's not a finisher, which is entirely reasonable. Emerson seems like a decent player, but bonkers deflected goals aside, he's not an effective attacking wing-back for now, and the club's chase of Adama is testament to this. Given the extremely talented Bergwijn and Kulusevski will be on the bench for most games, actually, that's changed now. And this kind of ages the question, I think, because you could send this a while back. So let me go back to that bit again. Given the extremely talented Bergwijn and Kulusevski will be on the bench for most games, would it not make more sense in the short term to work on a system that plays to the strengths of the players that are there, or better uses the squad's resources? The 3-4-3 and 3-5-2 have stabilised the team, but why go the rest of the season asking Reguilon and Emerson to be attackers when there are actual attackers on the bench? If you flip it around, other than Jose, would anybody purposefully implement a system that forced Son and Lucas into defending fullback positions for 70% of each game? It would be considered a ridiculous waste of their strengths. Is Conte fundamentally not able to transfer his passing patterns from a back three system to a back four system?
That's an interesting element of the question. I definitely think that that is very significant. So obviously, okay, obviously a lot of what's been said here is, has aged a lot over the last few games because Sessegnon and Doherty are... What a bizarre sentence. Sessegnon and Doherty are like really turning up their sort of creative performance in the final third for us and sort of taking those wingback roles by the horns pretty well. But I definitely felt this frustration in the several weeks prior. But I still think it speaks to a wider point in that we're sort of trapped with the back three a lot of the time. And I do think a lot of it comes down to, yeah, the patterns that Conte implements. Although we can switch between 3-4-3 and 3-5-2, the three centre-backs and the way that they divide up the pitch and the angles that they open, the from sort of the central midfield to the centre-backs, yeah, I think it's quite hard to get the sort of more pattern-based football going, especially with, you know, the way Conte has taught those patterns all along with the back four. And that means that we need to buy a right wing back who can make Doherty second choice again in the summer.
I mean, we've expressed frustration at the continual use of 3-4-3 when 3-5-2 looked like a really good option. And I have found that annoying, to be honest. Obviously less so now. We've got Kulusevski playing really well. But I think the 3-5-2, Conte used it when he didn't have Romero available. So he was struggling to build out from the back. So he played 3-5-2. It meant Winks would drop into the back line and build up and get on the ball and try and help support build up from the back. And he hasn't used that since the Leicester game. We've not used 3-5-2 because Romero's back and he doesn't feel we necessarily need it. But I do think he is quite dogmatic, isn't he, Conte? He has his system. He wants to use it regardless. He will shoehorn players in if he needs to use his system, because that's the system that best uses his patterns, or best is best able to use his patterns. And that is, it can be annoying when things aren't going well. It can be very annoying, as we've seen. He's not going to change, though, is he? Buddy, is this normal for Conte?
He has his way of playing. He has his setup, and that's how we play, and that's what he does. He's not going to change just because we want to play a back four. He has his way of doing things, and I'm happy, and I'm fully behind his system.
I just think that basically all modern coaches are dogmatic.
Yeah.
I just think that's how coaches learn.
Except
football.
For Graham Potter.
No, but I think him too. Coaches learn through like the coaches they had, and even if they weren't players, the sort of mentors they had. Mm-hmm. We all fan bases are essentially crying out for Plan B, right? And yeah. I think that people think of like Mourinho as a very sort of tactically adaptive manager, but like, God, we were crying out for keeping the ball and playing with the ball and playing with a high defensive line and stuff like that. But he was dogmatic and wedded to his style of play, which was to play on the counter. You know, the idea of teams just being able to completely change up, not like elements, not like tweaks, but like to really go from being one team to another team on the fly. It's just not something you see that much. What you see is teams who are more used to having the ball, switching to having less of it and sitting deeper when they are in the Champions League, like we saw with Pochettino, for example. But you just don't see teams who normally press high switching to sitting deep. And that's just the nature of coaching. And again, I think all teams are crying out for Plan B. All fan bases are like, what's this other thing that we've got? But it's not real. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, every manager from Sean Dyche to Arteta, they all got their own system that which they follow, and they live or die by. The weird ones is when you see someone like Frank Lampard, who just doesn't have any kind of discernible style, who's just dropped into the game because of who he is and who he knows. He doesn't have a way of playing. Even Gareth Southgate has a way of playing football and a system that he's wedded to.
I do think it will be interesting to see if after a bit of time, a pre-season, Conte might be a little bit more adaptable with the formation, though. I mean, obviously not the philosophy. I think the philosophy will remain. But I do think, you know, the point that Alex is making is around the formation and the players that are on the pitch as a result of the formation. So, for example, we know Conte likes to build up with a back three. Everton played a back four last night, and they built up from the back with a back three. Seamus Coleman tucked in on the right, and they had Jonjo Kenny pushed on the left. Man City build up with a back three, but play a back four. So there are other ways of achieving the same ends philosophically. And I think that will be interesting. But my understanding is that Conte hasn't verged from a back three in years now. I mean, since his Chelsea days, as I understand it. So, yeah, I mean, I think he would almost... The fact that he's even used Kulusevski as a wing-back in this short period, I think, tells you all you need to know. He wants to play a back three unless he has to move to a back four, and he would rather play players out of position as wing-backs than move to a back four and play wingers in their sort of proper, in air quotes, role. Is that fair to say?
Yep.
Cool. It's been a long one again. There's always lots to talk about with Spurs at the moment. I'm glad that we were able to launch into a positive start, thanks to the crushing, devastating win over Everton. And let's hope that the same happens next week. Remember to check out pleaties.com, our partners for March, pleaties.com. Use our discount code EXTRA20, which will get you 20% off.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.